Once upon a time, a very, very long time ago, there was a traveler. And this traveler came upon some workers. There were three workers, and they were each cutting stone. And he was curious what they were doing, and so he approached the first worker and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And the first worker looked very upset because he was bothered by this traveler, and he kept chiseling. He said, "I'm a stone cutter. What do you think I'm doing? I'm cutting stone." Well, the traveler kind of took a step back and decided to approach the second stone cutter. And he asked the same question, "What are you doing there?" And the second one was a little nicer. He looked up, looking weary and tired. He said, "I'm a stone cutter, and I'm making a living for my family so I can provide food and shelter for them." And then he went back to his stone cutting. And the traveler was curious. Two people doing the exact same thing, and yet they gave two different answers. And so he walked along, and he approached the third man, and he said, "What are you doing?" And the third man stood up straight, and he put his chisel to his side, and he said, "I am a stone cutter. I am building a cathedral." So for most of my life, I was stonecutter number one or stonecutter number two. I never had a job for more than maybe 2 years until this particular job, actually. I went from job to job trying to find something, trying to find a better job or a job that would be more fulfilling or something. I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew I was looking for something. And it wasn't until many, many years later that I realized that what I was looking for was work and not a job. And actually, I didn't know that there was a difference between work and a job until I ran across a book by Matthew Fox called The Reinvention of Work. Now, who here knows who Matthew Fox is? Father Matthew Fox. Father Matthew Fox was a Dominican priest, and he was actually cast out or expelled from his order for disobedience, for calling God mother and father, for not denouncing homosexuality. He was expelled for teaching original blessing rather than original sin. These days, he's an Episcopal priest. And he is a great inspiration and teacher to all kinds of people who are searching for an enlightened spirituality and an enlightened progressive Christianity. So from Matthew Fox, I learned that there is this really important difference between work and a job. Work, or let me begin with job. Job is something that comes from the outside. It's external to us. It is shaped by both threats and rewards. The threat of not being able to provide for our family, to provide for the most basic needs. And then the reward, cash, right? Paycheck, power maybe, status. The importance of having a job is obvious. And the suffering that comes from not having a job is also quite evident. Now, work, on the other hand, is something that comes from the inside. It moves from the inside out. It comes from the soul. Work is defined by what we love. Work is defined by what makes us come alive. We are best motivated in this kind of work by our passion and our desire rather than financial gain. The dream then for all of us, I think, is to find a situation where we can provide sufficient food, shelter, and security for our families while doing our work. Has anybody found that intersection? Yeah. And I bet those of you who have found that intersection feel grateful every single day of your lives. Yeah. You know, back in the days of awe and mystery, back in the days of Rumi, or even before that, back in the days when people wrote texts like Genesis or the Bhagavad Gita, whose words we use for the chalice lighting, or the Tao Te Ching. You know, back in those days, work was something that was understood to be a part of human nature, an essential part of who we are, and as we talked about a few weeks ago, whose we are, both who we are and whose we are. Work back then was not drudgery. It was an expression of our creative energy. It was all about co-creating and cooperating with the divine, with the cosmos, with God. All of the medieval mystics and philosophers wrote a lot about human work. For example, John of the Cross, he said, "My work, my occupation, it is love. It is all I do." Simple as that. And then there was the Benedictine nun, Hildegard of Bingen. She said that when human beings are engaged in good work, they become a flowering orchard pervading the cosmos, turning the wheel of the cosmos. Lovely, beautiful, dignified images of work. And then there was the Garden of Eden. The work of tilling and keeping was part of the delight of the garden. Adam and Eve weren't just hanging out in the garden. They were working, but it was good, good work. So those were the theologians back then with this wonderfully dignified, important sense of work as an expression of who we are as human beings. But then something happened. Modern-day preachers got their hand on some of these texts, and they turned this positive theology of work into a teaching that work is punishment for our sins. Using that part of Genesis where Adam and Eve are evicted from the garden, and God telling them that now they would have to toil for their food, alienating us from the earth and from the original dignity and blessing of work, these modern-day preachers are telling us that work is a punishment. Work is our punishment. And if work is hard, well, good. Work should be hard. You should suffer in your work. Because, after all, we are sinful creatures and we deserve to have miserable work lives, right? And that's how a lot of people, I think, see work, their work these days, as a curse, an obligation, a chore, something that they have to be dragged into. Studies these days show that record numbers of workers are stressed out. They are stressed out by their work because they don't make enough money, or they're overworked, or because they are not able to get along with their coworkers or their supervisors, their commutes are too long, or they just simply are not doing the work that makes them happy. For a lot of people, work has become a curse rather than the blessing it was meant to be. And that's for the people who are lucky enough to be working. Politicians and economists can't seem to agree about the real unemployment rate. Is it 8%? Is it 14%? I read an article where someone claimed it was 40%. So it depends whom you're counting. It depends how you're counting. But the bottom line is this: there are millions of our neighbors who want to work and cannot work. And worldwide, there are millions more who want to work and cannot find a job. On the other side of this situation of unemployment is overwork, because there are lots of people who are addicted to their work and overworked, people who are doing jobs that violate their own ethics and their own spirits. Too often when we are overworked or working at a job that just doesn't line up with our inner passions, we try to make up for that hole in our hearts by feeding the economic engine from the other side, by consuming more. Do you remember Vaclav Havel? He wrote a lot, he's been writing a lot, about consumerism and the consumer society in which we live. He observed that people are thinking far more of themselves these days because of all the stress we are folding into ourselves. They are filling their homes, he writes, with all kinds of equipment and pretty things. They try to raise their housing standards. They try to make life agreeable for themselves, taking more interest in their food and their clothing and their domestic comfort. And so this is what happens on the other end when there's too much work, too much emphasis on the job. Today, the prevailing attitude is that work and job are the same thing. Work and job are the same thing. It's all about getting paid, right? But, you know, both of these situations of severe unemployment and overwork point to the problem that we don't have a deep enough sense of what work really means, that we have lost the deep idea of work. We have forgotten that we were meant to build cathedrals. So much of our society operates in that industrial, machine-based worldview, right? And so work just becomes another cog in the economic machinery. You know, that word job is actually a very, very old word. It means gob, like lump or clump of work, a lump or piece of work. It's a cog in the machine. And the value of this lump of work is counted in the gross national product, right? That's what's important in our society. That's what gets counted, and that's what is valued, this piece of work. So it's the lump of that, it's the lump that's valued more than the person, more than the whole of the soul that is creating that piece of work. And so what does that mean for unpaid work? It doesn't fit into the gears and belts of the economic engine. So what about mothers and fathers raising their children at home? What about the work of volunteers picking up trash along Ironbound Road? Is there value in that? What about the work of daughters and sons quitting their jobs so they can take care of ailing parents? Is there value to that work? Both of these situations, when people are not working and when people are overworking, those come from the lack of an idea of a broader sense of work. You know, when people aren't working, either because it's their choice or because they're retired or they can't find a job, the message from our society is that they're no longer valued. They're not valued. And from the cold, stark perspective of the economic machinery, their lump of work, or actually lack of it, whatever they're doing in their life, doesn't have any value. This is a message that we hear over and over again. And if we're not careful, we start believing that message. We start believing that some people are less valuable to our society than others. We start believing that, and then we start acting upon that belief that some people just don't have any value in our society. Some people just don't have any worth. For those of us who have been out of work, we know exactly how terrible it feels to feel worthless and to feel useless. We know how it feels to hear over and over again the message that is coming from the machine. But we have to remember that that message is coming from the machine. It's not coming from life. The message from life is completely different. The message from life is, you are valuable. You are worthy. You are important. And it doesn't matter what gob of work you're contributing. From this perspective of life, there is great value. And if we could gain this perspective and value each person's work on its own merit, and not how it plugs into the machine. If we could do this, then you know what? It would be impossible for anyone to be out of work. Then it would be impossible for anyone to be out of work. There may not be enough jobs out there, but there is enough work in the world to keep us all very busy. I know it's hard to imagine, and it's a hard exercise to pull apart work and job, because we're so used to cramming those two things together. And our system keeps reinforcing this smooshing together, because it keeps telling us about the market value of cutting the stone rather than building the cathedral. We have lost this idea, this deep idea of work. And this deep idea of work, I wish I could come up with a different name for it. It's like work with a big W. The work. You know, big work. Deep work. This idea that I keep referring to is spiritual work. It is deeply spiritual work. A work that comes from inside. A work that is an expression of our soul and our divine spirit. Because we have such a hard time seeing the difference between these two things, it's so easy to feel despair when we don't have a job, because we forget that we still have work. We have good, good work. Work, vocation, it comes from the notion of voco, call. What calls? What calls? Some say it is the voice of God who calls, leading us to use the gifts we have been given. Like the Rumi poem, God says, "What have you done with the gifts I have given you? What have you done with the hands I have given you, and the eyes and the feet? What have you done with your mind, your powers of reason and love? What have you done?" Some people say, well, who calls? Who calls is like an inner voice, an inclination, an intuition from inside that tells me what I love, what makes me come alive, what I'm good at. And also this ability to look out there and see what needs to be done, to see the hole in the jar, to see an opening in a house that needs a door. It's some intuition from inside that recognizes what needs to be done. Now, for some people, that work that they find will be a life's work, one that will carry them through most of their lives. For others, that work can change from week to week, from year to year as they follow their call. Work not for a reward, but never cease to do thy work. Set thy heart upon thy work. So what is thy work? What is thy work? Not necessarily a job, although they may be the same for you, but what is your work today? What is your work right now, in this hour? What is your work? I believe that work, our work, is to bring forth our deepest self, because I know that the deep self is inherently good, inherently valuable, and something that the world desperately, desperately needs. Thomas Aquinas once gave this definition of work. He said, work is to display a good activity. To display a good activity. That definition reminded me of last Sunday after services. One little girl came up to me and she held up a picture that she had painted during her spirit play class. She was beaming with this huge, proud smile and presented me with her beauty, her good activity, her work. One of the things that marks the transition from childhood to adulthood is getting a job, right? We don't expect children to work at a job, but we expect adults to be working at a job. But if we all could embrace a bigger, deeper meaning of work, then work is something that every single person could do. Our spirit play class, where our youngest go on Sunday morning, is based on Montessori education. In spirit play and Montessori, work, and this is the kind of spiritual work that I've been talking about this morning, is woven into the curriculum. By using the word work over there, they learn that work is not just things that grown-ups do to get a paycheck. They discover that work is something that fulfills the spirit and satisfies the mind. They learn that work is the display of good activity. This is the work of building a cathedral. And this is what we are teaching our youngest. We are teaching them to build cathedrals. So if the deeper meaning of work is to display that good activity, then it automatically leads me to the next question, which is, what is our work? What is our work as WUUs? Because we are not just a random collection of people who just kind of hang out here on Sunday morning. We are people who volunteered to come together to do something, to do a good work, a good activity in the world. And so what is our work? What is our work together? This year, we have an opportunity to take on some meaningful work, to provide shelter to our neighbors who would otherwise have no place else to go. And this morning I've asked Helen Hansen to come up and paint a picture of what that work, that good work, might be like for us. And after she finishes, I just want to let you know that if you want more information, we're going to have a Q&A session tomorrow night at 7 o'clock about this.
Good morning. Imagine that it's Wednesday, February 6th, 2013. Our WU community has made a choice to become part of the Community of Faith mission in Greater Williamsburg area. It's 5 o'clock. The temperature is 35 degrees and the sky is gray. You, a volunteer, have just arrived at WUU to do your work of helping house people who need a home, a warm place to be, and food. You're grateful to have the chance to be part of the Community of Faith mission, as WUU is grateful to have a chance to participate with 15 other faith groups. You walk through the foyer into the kitchen and greet two friends and their middle school-aged children who are a dinner setup team. Then you put your pan of lasagna in the oven to keep warm. The kitchen team is busy making salad and garlic bread, filling pitchers with water and lemonade, and brewing coffee. You walk through the foyer into the open, unfamiliar-looking sanctuary. The Sunday volunteers have stacked the chairs along the walls to free the sanctuary space for sleeping and eating this week. At 5:15, you greet two people who you've seen at church, but you don't really know who they are. They're setting up tables and chairs for dinner at the back of the sanctuary and a serving table in the foyer. They're arranging some chairs in conversation area. You introduce yourself. Then you notice two partner volunteers from Temple Beth El who have just arrived with their pans of lasagna and will stay for dinner and clean up. You take them into the kitchen, introduce them to your other friends, put their lasagna in the oven with yours to keep warm. Coming in right behind them is another good friend who will be working for the second night at the registration table. At 5:25, you and your friend move to the reception table just inside the door to assemble check-in materials. You'll see 25 totes labeled with guests' names in front of the social justice and membership tables. They contain bedding, towels, and toiletries that we give to each guest for the week. Now it's 5:30. It's almost dark and unfamiliar cars begin to arrive. You look outside and notice that some people are being dropped off and some have arrived in their own cars. All are holding their coats closely to avoid the wicked wind. The kitchen and setup volunteers gather with you in the foyer to greet our 25 guests. You've been wondering what it would be like. As they enter, you can see that they're single men, single women, and families. They're young, middle-aged, and elderly. They're all shades of white, brown, and black. Some are well-groomed and well-dressed. Some are not. Some are carrying bags and suitcases. Others are not. You and your friend ask their names, look at their IDs, and check them off in the Wednesday column. Some of the guests talk about their day as they check in. They've been coming here since Sunday, so they are beginning to be familiar with each other. Some are eager to engage in conversation while they wait for dinner. Some are silent. Many comment on the good smells and the light and warmth of our building. At 6 o'clock, the lasagna and warm bread are brought to the serving table. Jennifer officially welcomes everyone and says a blessing. You have an opportunity to have a dinner conversation with people you have just met, just like sometimes at the WUU potlucks. By 7 o'clock, dinner's over. The first team is free to leave, and the cleanup team arrives to work in the kitchen. A few of the guests volunteer to help. Although your shift is over, you decide to stay and help some students with tutoring. As you look around the room, you notice that one group of people is watching a movie, one's playing Scrabble, and a few people are sitting in the conversation area. You notice a woman sitting by herself. When you invite her to share her story, she tells you that over the past 2 years, she's lost a good job and her home. You see a little girl with a sticker on her shirt that says, "Great job." She says her teacher gave that to her because she got her homework done. And somebody from WUU helped her with her homework and made sure she packed it up so she had it at school the next day. By 9:45, the first of the night shift people volunteers arrive. They'll be here for 2 hours helping anyone that needs help during the night, but mostly just making sure that everyone stays safe. By 10 o'clock, the lights are out and it becomes very quiet. During the night, two more shifts of volunteers arrive for 3-hour watches. The next morning at 6 a.m., it's Thursday. Still dark and cold, but another group of six volunteers arrives for the morning shift. They stow bedding, they help the guests stow their beddings and belongings in their tote. They make a simple breakfast. The smell of coffee helps everyone start their day in a better way. During the night, we've had 15 volunteers from WUU and our partners to work with people who need us. All of us volunteers have discovered that in doing this work, our participation in the Community of Faith mission has given us a non-judgmental acceptance of the life of another human being.